Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. This week, our topic is quite a sensitive topic, I think, especially in light of all that's going on in the world. So I want to give a little bit of a trigger warning to let you know that this may not be the day to listen to this. It may not be the time to listen to this. You may not be in the company that you would like to be in to listen to this. Or it just may not be the episode for you. I'm speaking with Hallie Faulkner, and she is a lovely, kind-hearted, sensitive woman who teaches Kundalini yoga as her primary way of teaching yoga. And she is a sexual assault survivor. She teaches about how to heal from sexual assault and from violence against women. It's such a poignant topic, and I hope that you have internal resources to listen to this because I love her approach. I love her energy. I can see why her trainings are filling up, and I think we have a lot to learn from her. And at the same time, women in general might be feeling a certain level of assault mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually right now. And so I think we really have to ask ourselves, am I in a place where I want to go deeper? I want to listen. I want to learn. I want to open up a little bit and do some exploration. Or is this not the time? Is this not something that needs to happen today? And, even myself, I'm feeling quite tender about the interview. I've had a really hard time the last couple of weeks thinking about the history of women in the United States and all the strides we've made over the last 100 years. I myself was born on Women's Liberation Day, the day that all the women took off their bras and walked through the streets and then burned their bras in trash cans. I always feel so happy that I was born on that day and am a champion for women. I love women. And I'm feeling really, really tender about our future and about how we can stay together, how we can support one another, love one another, comfort one another, be in community as women. And I'm looking into local things that I can do to be in connection with more women going forward. So I hope that you will listen to this and it will be nourishing to you. And if this is one of those episodes that's a little too much right now, I honor you and support your choice to move on and find something a little bit more upbeat and, nourishing. But maybe you having the choice of how do you spend your time today, you take that choice. I support that. So, all right, let's go get to know Hallie. She is lovely, and I can't wait to let you hear all the wisdom that she has to share with you.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Season 7. We are so happy that you've been here on the journey with us for almost 2 years now, and we're looking at over 130,000 downloads. It has been a wonderful run together, and we are going to continue to provide excellent content. And this season, we want to go into the depths of the human experience and the human heart. So stay tuned. We're going to continue this journey together, and we look forward to seeing you for all of season 7.
Hello, Hallie. Thank you for being here today with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Where are you located?
I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm in my home office. If you're watching, you'll see a little piano behind me, which I like to play sometimes, not enough, but when I get inspired.
Wonderful. So, Hallie, we have a sensitive topic to talk about today in so many ways. And I think, especially with all that's going on in the world and especially the US, it's become even more of a topic of women's safety and health and happiness and beyond. So, would you mind starting by telling us a little bit about your work and how you came to this work?
Thank you. Yeah. So I'm a yoga therapist and a trauma-informed trainer, and I specialize in working with women who have experienced sexual assault and sexual violence and intimate partner violence. And my trauma-informed training really has a focus on teaching people how to work with sexual assault survivors and support us in ways that are warm and welcoming and safe. I got into this work because I'm a survivor myself. I experienced sexual assault and abuse throughout my childhood, when I was about 3 years old to about 8 years old-ish. As many survivors can attest, our memories can often be fuzzy, which is sometimes our brain's way or our body's way of protecting us, but they're there, right? There's a little bit fuzziness. And I coped with the trauma I experienced as a child in a few different ways. One is compartmentalization. So I put it in a box, and the box was like, this solid thing on the left side of my body, and I just didn't touch it, didn't talk about it, didn't touch it, didn't even acknowledge it was there for a long time. But it took its toll, right? Like holding that box shut physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually as well. And I also use like perfectionism as a coping mechanism. So I was a straight A student, played the sports, got the awards, the accolades, got all the degrees I could get, got my master's degree, went to law school. And finally, when I did all those things and it looked good on the outside, right? It was like, if I look this good and shiny on the outside, then people won't know what's actually happening on the inside. And finally, got all those things. And then I had to actually face my own devastation and unhappiness. And yoga and meditation provided a foundation for me to be able to open the box at my own pace and start to work through the trauma. Be honest with myself about my experiences, which took a lot of years. When I finally got on the other side of that, and by no means do I mean my healing process is over, I just mean I was feeling okay enough. When I was finally feeling okay enough on the other side of that, I started to think about how I could share a lot of the yoga-based, mindfulness-based tools that I had learned about healing with other survivors. Women who had experienced sexual violence. A lot of people don't know that one in three women in the US experiences sexual trauma and sexual violence. And a lot of people also don't know that those numbers are much higher for certain demographics of women. So women experiencing homelessness have about 90% likelihood to be sexually assaulted. Transgender women, particularly Black transgender women, have more than 50% likelihood of experiencing sexual violence, as well as Indigenous women. So I knew there was a need for healing, like a deep, deep well and need for healing. And I knew that I had tools to offer. And so I started in 2017, after I became trained in Kundalini yoga and trauma-informed yoga, I started teaching, at the time I called them woman warrior workshops, healing yoga workshops for sexual assault survivors. And from the very first one I taught, which was in Sacramento, where I was living at the time, the rooms filled up. They filled up, which is always a shock to me because you know how it is. Like you put out an offering and you don't know if where it's going to land. And the rooms was full in Sacramento, and the rooms have been full since because women are looking for a place to heal. And we are ready, I think, to speak up about our lived experiences and heal. And so eventually I founded a nonprofit organization, which was called Porch Light Wellness, to provide healing yoga workshops for sexual assault survivors. We were in operation for about 5 years, and we served hundreds of women across the country. We had trauma-informed trainings for women around the world. And more recently, I transitioned to do a more individualized focused practice. I love the nonprofit, but I also didn't want to keep trying to raise money or write grants. I've started working more recently in the yoga therapy format so I can work with clients one-on-one, work with survivors one-on-one, and create really mindful and like full-bodied spaces for healing.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. I mean, that was like this big arc of a journey, and now I feel like I want to go back and talk about pieces of that. The first one that comes to mind, I think you got a degree in law. Is that true?
I did, yeah.
And looking back, is there any significance to that? Were you wanting to find justice? Or, I mean, it's just a curiosity on my part that doesn't have to have an answer, or you could say, I'm not interested in that question.
No, I'm interested in the question. I think it's really insightful. Yeah, I've always been interested in justice. At the time when I got my law degree, I was working in education policy. I was interested in education policy and creating education policies that are more fair for more kids, that give lower income kids and kids of color more educational opportunities. For me, I know a lot of kids hate going to school, but for me, school is a safe place. When my house wasn't safe, like school was a place where I was like cared for and respected, and there were clear boundaries. So like there was and still is a part of me that like wants to make sure that all kids have access to high quality schools that meet their needs. So that was my focus with my law degree. I also, as you might be able to tell, I love words. I love writing. And that was like a lot of law school. I mean, it's really all law school because it was like words and writing and learning how to put words together in a way where you can achieve something or affect change. So yeah, that was a lot of the motivation. Yeah.
And I love that your nature and part of your gift is to want to protect all kids and make sure that they're safe and educated, like you said, good boundaries and a safe place at school.
I will also say, because I have to be honest, like I'm working on, radical honesty. And a big part of the reason I got the law degree, not the whole reason, but a part of it was ego driven. Like I wanted to be fancy and I wanted to have the power and I wanted to people to respect me and think I was smart. And it was also a continuation of that, the shell of perfectionism, right? Like if I just build this thing and it looks like everything's going right, then I don't have to look at what's actually happening inside of me, and no one else is going to look at what's happening inside of me. So that was part of the motivation as well.
That is such a perfect segue to my next question. So while you were going about getting all of these degrees and showing the world how competent you are aware that your inner world was not as the way that you would prefer, or was there a disconnect at that time?
That's such a good question. No, I wasn't aware. Like,
Okay,
because,
that's.
I didn't have anything to compare it to because my like biological father was the abuser in my life. So I was born into a home that was unsafe. So sometimes I would look at my friends or colleagues and be like, they seem to have something that I don't have. Now I'm like, oh, it's like a secure upbringing, like a balanced nervous system. So sometimes I had this feeling like, how come things look different or seem to feel different for them? But I didn't have anything to compare my experience to, right? Now I do, right? Like I've learned to balance my nervous system so I can look back and see like how unbalanced it was and how I was in, fight or flight mode for basically all of my life until I turned 30. But I certainly wasn't aware of it at the time. I think partially because I lived in a pretty constant state of dissociation, which I know is very common for people with post-traumatic stress disorder, which I had. And so for a lot of my life, I have this very clear feeling of living outside of my body, like almost like looking down on my life and observing it, but not being embodied, which I could talk for a long time about
I want you to
how.
unpack that because so many people with trauma and complex trauma, they have never heard that. That concept has not been introduced to them. And when they hear it, these bells go off like, whoa, that's how I feel. So can you unpack what it feels like to be disembodied and then what it feels like when you do become embodied and, oh, wow, that feels different?
Yeah. So we talk about this a lot in my trauma-informed training, which is the experience of going from being dissociated. And as you know, many different levels of dissociation, right? Like it's a whole spectrum, but the process of going from being dissociated to being present in my body, for me, it happened over several years, took a lot of time. And what we talk about in my teacher training is what I experienced, which is when we start to get present to our bodies, when I started to get present to my body, it's the whole spectrum of feeling that our bodies experience as humans, right? So there's like the deep sorrows and pains and traumas that I experienced and all of the felt sensations of that and the joy of being alive and eating something delicious and playing in the ocean. It like makes me emotional, right? I often compare healing from trauma as like moving from black and white to like full color, like in Wizard of Oz when Dorothy goes from her black and white world to the full color world of Oz. That's my experience of becoming embodied. And one thing that I think is important and not talked about enough is that everyone who has experienced trauma and everyone who is living at least sometimes in dissociation needs to have the space to become embodied at the pace that works for them. Because if people feel like forced to all of a sudden have sensations where they haven't had sensations before, that can be damaging, right? That can flood our nervous systems and then we shut down again and we're scared to go back to the feeling of being embodied. So for example, very practically speaking, if I'm teaching a trauma-informed yoga class, which is the only kind of yoga I teach now, I'll say like, you might want to check in to see how this feels for your shoulders, if that feels comfortable for you. If it doesn't, just ignore it. Right. So I think so often in yoga, there's this focus on like, we need to feel this way, or we need to be present, or we need to be present to all the sensations. Right. But actually, if we're healing from trauma, or even just being in the experience of being a human being, we might not always want to feel all the feelings. And that can be okay too. Right. I invite people to really tap into the moment and like what level of sensation and embodiment feels comfortable and okay and supportive and healing for them in that moment.
So beautiful. So I noticed when you were talking, this will be on YouTube in a video format, but it's also on audio format. So many people are listening on audio. I noticed when you were describing this for us, you closed your eyes and tilted your head down and almost like you were going inward when you were speaking. Mm. Is that something you'd be willing to talk about? I do that too. So I don't think it's a terribly unusual thing, but I just noticed that you really kind of drew inward as you were speaking about that.
It's so interesting. I like to hear about how it works for you. I think for me, when I really need to focus, sometimes I have to go in because I'm so sensitive, right? Like, all the lights, the colors. So if I really need to focus, sometimes that's helpful for me.
Yeah, that is same for me. I don't know if trauma makes us highly sensitive people, you know, kind of being in that hypervigilance. Mm. We can take in so much information, but I find the same that when I really want to have clarity, I'm always just closing my eyes and kind of tilting my head down. So I thought, oh, I recognize that. And I just wanted to check if that was some of your experience too. So can we move into this whole thing about perfectionism? Because most of the women I know have a version of this, and in fact, don't or didn't know that there was anything wrong with it because society had rewarded us for this. So tell us about the link between trauma and perfectionism and anything you think we need to know about that.
It's a good question. I mean, I can mostly just speak from my own lived experience. I haven't studied this one, but I do see it come up a lot with my clients. You know, for some reason, when you were talking about how you see this, especially with women, I thought about my daughter. I have a 4.5-year-old daughter, little sweetheart. She's learning how to write her numbers, and she hates when she writes a number backwards. I see she does it, and then she like crosses it out. She does like a huge X, like as hard as she can, right, with the crayon. And then she'll write it like 5 or 6 times the right way. You know, I bring that up just because I'm curious about where that comes from, this feeling of like, I don't want to get something wrong. And I wonder how much of it is like innate, how much of it is socialized. I do know that girls are rewarded for following the rules and boys are rewarded for, you know, if we're talking about traditional gender roles, boys are rewarded for being brave or being trailblazers or leaders or whatever that is, right? So I think there's definitely some of that. And I know that as a trauma response, many children who have grown up in traumatic or unsafe households have adverse childhood experiences. One of the common responses is this like overachiever perfectionist child who holds a lot of the pain and suffering of the family and tries to look okay, right? Or look good on the outside as a way to avoid or cover up or hide what's really happening.
I love all that you've said. And I found from my lived experience of going through this that it's also about control for me. Mm. If I could just keep everything in order and keep it looking good on the outside, then I would feel some sense of safety or control that, okay, I've done all I can to keep myself safe. And even to this day, as a recovering perfectionist, I still love detail and organization and my calendar being just right and everything in a place. And I just think that's a leftover residual from using perfectionism as my way to control my environment and make myself feel better.
Yeah, the control piece really resonates with me, right? Like if I just do these things, then everything will be okay. But I also try to not throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, which is to say that I think it's badass that you have an organized calendar. I want my calendar to look like that. You know what I mean? So there's a both and there.
Hey, did you know that Optimal State has a special course to help you learn Yoga Nidra? The first course is free. It's called 12 Days of Yoga Nidra, and you can find it at www.optimalstateyoganidra.com. And if you like that and you want to add becoming a Yoga Nidra facilitator to your skill set, no matter what job you do, which might be being a mom or a nurse or a therapist or a yoga teacher, we would love to train you in our 6-month Yoga Nidra facilitators course. Again, www.optimalstateyoganidra.com. We hope you'll join us.
It feels good. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it does.
I'm not giving that one up.
Yeah, it does.
No matter where it came from. So, Holly, I know we have a lot of yoga teachers, Ayurvedic practitioners, yoga therapists that listen to our show, and also sexual assault survivors. What are some of the kind of general principles that you teach about in your trainings that we could become educated a little bit? Obviously, if this piques interest, people will come to your full training. But what are some of the main principles that you like to share with your students?
What I teach is that the most important principle of any trauma-informed space is that everything is optional, that if I'm the teacher or the leader, the instructor, I might be sharing tools or practices or suggestions that might help people feel good or people might like or want, but that's all they are, is suggestions or invitations. I start every class I teach by saying, this is your space to do what you want with your body. I'm going to do what I want with my body. I'm the expert in my body. I am my own best healer. And you are the expert in your body. You are your own best healer. This is a space where you can move and breathe and be in whatever way you want. You can modify in whatever way feels good for you. If I stand up and I'm moving my arms in circles for 3 minutes, but you'd prefer to sit down and journal or lie down on your side and rest, I invite you to do what's best for you. And 10 out of 10 times, what I see after I say that, and while I'm saying it, shoulders resting, people exhaling, bellies expanding. And all that is to say, people's nervous systems get the sign, get the signal. This is a safe space. This is a space where you can do what you want with your body and no one's going to interfere with what you want to do with your body. And I think that goes for that kind of statement that everything is invitational, is a foundational practice for any trauma-informed space. And it is particularly important for working with survivors because Tarana Burke said this, so I have to give her credit. She's the founder of the Me Too movement. I heard her say once that the one thing we have in common as survivors is that there was at least one moment where we didn't have control over what was happening to our bodies. For some of us, that was many moments. For some of us, that was just a few moments. It's the one thing that binds us together. And for me, as a trauma-informed yoga teacher working with survivors, I need people to know from the moment we start that your experience on the mat is the radical opposite to that. Your experience on the mat is a space where you have full control and autonomy and choice over your body in every moment. So that's the foundation. That's where we start. And then there are so many other tricks and tips and tools that we also share and talk through.
I love what you're saying. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I feel like in my mind, and I know this is not truth, but in my mind, I say to myself, don't all yoga teachers do that? Don't they give those permissions? And then I remember, like, no, they don't. And in fact, yoga oftentimes has been the opposite, in that It's been very dogmatic and hierarchical and patriarchal, and that you're not going to belong if you don't do it the way everybody else does it and, you know, sit up straight and go for perfectionism, right? It's so interesting for me to hold both of those. Like, of course, that's how we teach. And then I remember, no, Amy, that's not how. So I don't know. Do most of the people that come to your trainings, is that a new idea for them?
I feel similar to how you feel. And we talk about this in the training. The way I feel about this trauma-informed yoga approach is like, once you know it, once you're introduced to it, you can't imagine teaching any other way. And you certainly can't imagine being in a class as a student in any other way. Sometimes I, like, against my better judgment, go to, you know, random yoga classes, a friend invites me or something. And from the very first moment, I'm like, don't tell me what to do with my body. Like, this is my hour that I paid for. This is my mat. Like, don't tell me to stretch harder if I don't like want to stretch harder. Don't tell me to stretch in that direction if I don't want to stretch in that direction. And so what we talk about in the training is that, like, for most yoga teachers, if you don't know, you don't know. It's still not a common or a standardized part of any yoga teacher training, you know, this trauma-informed lens.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, thinking about this. I don't go to public classes for the most part for this reason, which is just reminding me, like, oh yeah, they tell me what to do and I don't want to do that. I think inherently, yoga is about getting to know yourself, turning your senses inward, turning your mind inward, starting to feel and sense. And it only makes sense to me that, of course, you'd have to have autonomy and choice about how to do that, when to do that, how fast to do that. Like, it doesn't even make sense that we should be outwardly directed by someone else to do that process.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting relationship, right? Student and teacher, so to speak. It goes both ways, right? Mm-hmm. We're both each other's teachers and each other's students. But, you know, I've experienced, and I'm sure you have as well, there is a lot of benefit to being led by someone or like guided by someone. When I'm a student and there's a teacher that I really trust and love and I can tell cares for me, like, that's a beautiful experience. Like, I can experience real spiritual movement and growth, like, in that space. And also for me, I need to know, just like you said, I have autonomy and space and choice in order to get to that level of comfort.
Yeah. So I want to go back to your story. Was it when you experienced yoga and or meditation that your healing journey started? I mean, was that like the turning point?
Yes and no. So the yes is because I definitely had this moment when I moved to Sacramento, California in 2012. I started practicing yoga there regularly and I had this moment, which I know a lot of people have. I've heard it called the big boohoo, where the yoga class was over and I just couldn't stop crying and I couldn't get off my mat because I couldn't stop crying and like something had been cracked open. And I remember the teacher, her name was Sukh Beard. She was so sweet, just cleaning up the whole room, putting all the mats away, wiping the floor. And there I was crying. And she, you know, came and put her hand on my back. She never didn't really say anything, but she came and put her hand on my back for a while until I was ready to get up. I don't know what broke open then, but something broke open. And pretty soon after that, I decided to start seeing a therapist and doing EMDR therapy and really being honest about my life experience and start to open the box in a way that felt good for me and process the trauma. So that's the yes. But the no part is because I have this like very clear belief and understanding that like I chose my life for a reason. I came into this life for a reason. I chose my parents and my household and my lived experience for a reason. And so to me, like that's when the healing process really began. It was like this choice of this life. Every year, every moment of my life has been like gathering the tools and information for that big boohoo to really opening me up. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about EMDR? I was in the swimming pool this morning and I came out and I'm like, I have to read that EMDR book on my nightstand. It's just sitting there for months because I know it has something to do with the yoga dristis and healing. And I just can feel there must be connection. Do you find a connection between EMDR and yoga, or are those two separate things for you?
I'm curious to hear about your theories on the connections. I mean, it's all related, right? It's brain science, it's glandular, right? So EMDR therapy has been a lifesaver to me. I always say my partner, my angels, and my family and EMDR therapy and yoga were like the things that got me through the, the hardest days of my healing process. EMDR therapy, for those of you who don't know, is like there are different tools that people use, basically connect the left and right sides of the brain and get like a rhythm going between the left and right sides of the brain as you process traumatic events, the type of traumatic events that are kind of just stuck in the body and in the brain. There's actually a chapter about EMDR therapy, I believe, in The Body Keeps the Score, which is, a seminal work about trauma. But for me and for many other people, it just EMDR helps process trauma in a way that often nothing else can.
What I think is interesting about it is you don't have to talk about it. You can think about the trauma, but the fact that you don't have to speak of it as you do the eye movements, desensitization, that's a hard word for me. So, yeah, I love that because not everybody wants to speak of it.
That's part of the reason that these spaces always fill up, in my yoga classes for survivors is because sometimes it feels good to just be with other people who have a shared experience, who are like-minded, who are interested in healing, but not have to talk about anything. It's the opposite of a support group, right? Which I hate. I know they work for a lot of people, but just the idea of like having to sit there and like be still and talk about the worst things in our lives. It's not for me and it's not for a lot of people. So sometimes in many situations, it's enough to just be and feel supported.
So on that note, how has Kundalini yoga? I know that there's a lot of community in Kundalini. I'm not a Kundalini person, but from the outside looking in, it seems like a lot of y'all are really close and you're like this big happy family. Can you talk about that? And did the Sangha help you heal also, or was it mainly the techniques and tools and practices?
That's a good question. So I know Kundalini is having its little moment of controversy
Well,
right
yeah, we'll
now.
get to
Yeah,
that.
for me, it's the practices, like deep and powerful practices, and my teacher, Krishna Kaur. Krishna is, if you don't know her, you got to know her. She's a 85-year-old yogi, deep spiritual teacher who's been practicing and teaching yoga since she was 30 years old, so over 50 years. She's traveled all around the world teaching. She still does travel a little bit to China. She leads a training in China and I believe in Africa each year. And my teacher training was in Krishna's living room. Krishna is a Black woman who was born and raised in Los Angeles. She's still there. She says Los Angeles is the land of eternal spring. And my training was in her living room. Her living room is cleared. It's a wood floor and has nothing but her teacher bench, lots of yoga mats, and then these big floor-to-ceiling windows that face the east. So you can see the sunrise every morning as you're practicing. I got the lineage and the lessons from her. I still get them from her and call her and we talk, or I'll join her teachings on Zoom because she's across the country from me now. So for me, that was the power, that connection with my teacher and still learning what she has to share. And then, of course, the practices themselves, which I think you can only know by practicing them. What I like about Kundalini practices is they are very specific. So there's practice for digestion, practice for balancing the nervous system, for clear communication, for healing the heart center, right? And so, and maybe this is the lawyer in me, but I like to know how to get things done. And so I like that the practices are so specific and really practically useful in that way.
So, I mean, the way that I see it, and again, I'm not very learned in this area, are they kind of like protocols for digestion? Like, do these 6 to 10 postures and/or breathing techniques, and it will affect the Apanavayu, which will likely have a good effect on your digestion. Is it kind of like that?
Yeah, so in Kundalini yoga, there are thousands of kriyas exercise sets. So, yeah, there's one exercise set for, I think it's called the healthy bowel system. There's actually a good amount, probably 10 or 20, focused on the digestive system and apana that put together both breathing exercises and physical movement in a sequence to support digestion, both physical, emotional digestion. Yeah.
And you know, I've heard critiques, you know, the master, I cannot remember his name right now, kind of made these up. But even if that's true, first of all, aren't we all doing that? But second of all, like if it was based on actual subtle anatomy and yogic and Ayurvedic ways, I personally don't really have a problem with that. But have you ever heard that critique that these aren't ancient protocols?
Yeah, so there's like a documentary that came out recently about Kundalini Yoga, or like a docu-series, and I watched a little bit of it, and I think that was one of the things that they said. I only watched part of the first episode, so I might have missed some stuff,
And
but
I
I
think
think
it's called Breath of Fire. I just looked it up, Breath of Fire. And I think it's on HBO.
There's a lot I could say about that stuff, but I don't think it's the most important thing to talk about. I think that what's important is what you said, which is that it works. The practices work. I know this from my own experience, and I know it from my work with my clients and in the workshops I lead. That being said, like, I'm not here to convince anyone, right? Like, I only know from my experience what works. And also, like, different things work for different people. When I talk sometimes with folks about meditation, they say, like, oh, I don't meditate, or I can't meditate. But then I'll learn that they love to go for like a 20-mile bike ride on Sundays, or love to put their feet in the stream by their house and like listen to the water after work. Different things work for different people. I know what has worked for me and worked for the people I work with. And that's what I like to share. And I'm also always open to learning other things that work too.
Yeah. I think that's one amazing thing about yoga is there's so many different styles, and some people prefer alignment and stillness, some people prefer more dynamic movement and kind of vigor, other people, you know, I just think it's so cool the broad spectrum, and that we could probably most of us find a style that we like and that works for us, whether it's yin or restorative or vinyasa yoga.
I know a couple of weeks ago, I tried my first aerial yoga class. I don't know if you've ever tried it before, but I'd
Have.
been wanting to for years, and it was like so fun. Like, I felt like a little kid turning upside down and learning to move my body in a different way.
Yeah. Well, I think our listeners will not be happy with me if I don't circle back around to this HBO film called The Breath of Fire. Is there any cognitive dissonance between your life's work and your life experience and helping women and the charges that are made in this film? Is it Yogi Bhajan? I'm so sorry. I should have made sure I had my facts correct. I actually haven't watched the movie yet, but because I think in the movie he's also accused of sexual assault. Have you heard that? Yeah. So is there any kind of discord in your mind about those two things? Or do you feel like many things can be true and it's okay. I'm just doing good work in the world. I would just love to hear, because I actually have had a teacher that got in trouble for something similar, and it really caused me a lot of pain for about 10 years. I couldn't do chanting because I had learned chanting from that teacher, and it just got stuck. I just literally couldn't chant. So I had a long healing period before I could chant again and felt like it worked its way through me, that kind of thing. So I'm just curious
Yeah, I'm
if there's
sorry to hear
anything.
that. Yeah, I mean, like so many women have had this experience so many times of learning from someone, or listening to their music, or listening to their opinions, or reading their articles, or whatever it is, watching their comedy specials, and then finding out that they've sexually assaulted women, they've harassed women, anywhere along the spectrum, right, of misogyny and violence. And as someone who practices Kundalini Yoga, teaches Kundalini Yoga, I definitely had that moment when I learned the truth about Yogi Bhajan. I will say, like, he's not my teacher. He never has been my teacher. Krishna is my teacher, my beloved teacher, which I'm grateful for. And for me as a teacher, I separate the teachings from the teacher. And that's my own experience of it. And my path in this world and in my work is to hold healing spaces for women, period. It's an area of work that's more and more needed, and more necessary, and more wanted, because women have been subject to sexual violence and gender-based violence for thousands and thousands of years. And we are now putting our foot, our collective foot down, or our collective feet down, and we're saying no more, right? I think This is coming up also in like the fight for reproductive health, reproductive justice. And I am doing my best to hold that space, right? And it's messy and it's icky and sometimes it's uncomfortable. And I make so many mistakes all the time. And I'm committed to holding it, however kind of messy or uncomfortable or sometimes weird it might be.
Thank you for being brave to take on that question and just tell us your experience with that. I'm empathizing with you. I too had to have many discussions like this when I went through this with my teacher. And I agree, these are the tools that have helped me, the ones that I see working with people that have a long lineage of really amazing teachers. And I personally, in the end, after, you know, a lot of reflection, a lot of challenge within myself and within the community, decided I wanted to keep teaching these teachings in spite of the imperfect humans that they have come through.
Yeah. So I'm glad you did.
Yeah. It is such hard work. I think so many of us now have been through this with teachers over the last 20 years. It's becoming more common. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like it's also giving power to women to not just give themselves over to their yoga teachers and to actually take charge and take a stand within their own life and say, hell no, I'm not doing that. I don't care if everybody else looks like they're doing it. I don't want to do that. So in some way, I feel like it has been very empowering to a lot of women too, to come through the other side and say, hell no.
Yeah, I do think there was this kind of mythology around a teacher or a guru or a master that is being dispelled. You know, I like how you said we are imperfect humans. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to the idea of perfectionism, right? Like, I think it's healing to acknowledge that we're all imperfect humans and that no one really needs to be put on a pedestal. I think women in particular are really good at creating spaces where we can all learn from each other.
Yeah.
It's like pretty basic, right? We're all equal. We're all human beings. We're all here as teachers and students. And I think you're right. Like, the more we can be honest about the abuses of power that have happened in the past, the more we can create new dynamics where we're all teaching and learning from each other.
Yeah. I have to say that's been one of the most lovely things about the decades that many of us have spent in the yoga world, to go from this very hierarchical guru-based model and go through all those trials and tribulations and come out 20 plus years later with a sense of self and security and strength and confidence and ability to set boundaries. Like, I know for many, many women, that journey for the last 20 years has been super powerful.
Yeah, I can see it in the way you're talking about it. And I like how you mentioned boundaries. You know, as you can imagine, I work with a lot of my clients on boundaries, and boundaries are a big part of my trauma-informed training as well. And one thing I like about boundary work is, like, it's mutually beneficial, right? Like, as I set my own boundaries, people I'm working with, like, benefit. And as people set their own boundaries, like, I benefit. And I like that, like, mutual exchange. Because I think sometimes, especially for women, there's this idea of, like, well, I'm setting a boundary, but I'm going to hurt someone's feelings, when actually, like, we're all healthier when we all create our own boundaries.
I just said this to someone the other day. My worst experiences of hurting people that I love have been not setting boundaries early enough, letting too many things get pushed under the rug, and then a blow up happens and it's sometimes impossible to recover because I didn't set boundaries early. And it was much more harmful to do that than it would have been to say, look, I'm sorry if this is too direct. You may not like what you're about to hear, but I have to say this. You know, that would have been so much better 2 years earlier.
Yeah, that resonates with me for sure.
So, Hallie, I'd like to bring up your website now so that those of us watching on YouTube can see your beautiful website and the simplicity of it, the elegance of it, And so your website is www.hallifaukner, Hallifauknerr.com. And is there anything you want to tell us, direct us to on this website?
Sure, that's sweet of you to ask. So if you're interested in yoga therapy or, a survivor who might be interested, you can learn more about my yoga therapy practice. If you're interested in trauma-informed training, specifically how to teach yoga and meditation with an eye towards sexual assault survivors, you can check out my trauma-informed training, which I do both for individuals and for organizations. I have a 40-hour Yoga Alliance certified training that happens in the spring of every year online. And then I also do organizational training. So I work with law firms or shelters or clinics to train their staff on how to work with survivors in trauma-sensitive ways. And then I also offer annual healing retreats in El Salvador with my buddy Kimberly Ariela Duenas, who is a El Salvador native. And so our retreat just passed in October of 2024, but we'll have another one in the fall of 2025. So if you want to come and swim and surf and practice and meditate and drink some good coffee, you're welcome to check that out as well. And I would
That
just
looks
say,
amazing, by the way.
yeah,
I'm
I
like looking at
know.
these pictures, like, oh my goodness.
You're invited. And I would say, like, if you're listening to this and you disagree with anything I said, or you have questions about anything I said, or you love anything I said, or it resonates with you, or like anything, right? Like, if you just want to connect, but you're not even sure why, reach out to me. It's a tough world, and being a human is complicated and weird. And so we need each other, right? We need the Sangha to love us through it and hold us through it. So if you want to connect, you can find me on social media. You can send me a message. You can email me through my website. You can sign up for my newsletter, and I would love to connect with some like-minded folks.
Can you just tell us some of your social media handles?
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Hallie Faulkner, and I have a monthly newsletter that I send out, just some writing and reflections and offerings. So you can get to the newsletter through either my social media or my website.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Hallie, for your authenticity and your willingness to share your story. And I have no doubt you're going to be getting a lot of people connecting with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you for your curiosity and your beautiful listening. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Hallie, for sharing yourself with us today, from your delicate story to how you've come to this place of health and healing and beyond, and how you're sharing it with other women. We've just finished recording this session, and I'm kind of at a loss for words. I'm feeling a little tender, a little sensitive, maybe a little disembodied, unsure. I think for me, I'm going to need to take a little time today to process all that has been said today. I'll probably do some yoga nidras, go for a walk, take a nap later, and just give myself the space to process what happened on this episode. And it's not that anything bad happened. I think it was a lovely episode, but I'm just noticing a real internal, almost buzzing sensation and a little bit of heightened awareness and a little choke in my throat and a little crunch in my heart, a little contraction in my heart. So I know, even though I can't articulate it and I can't even think my way through what I'm feeling right now, what I can do is check in with my body and know that something affected me today. And I'm going to go and give the space and time and slowness to kind of process what is that about. So maybe you need to do the same, maybe not, but I just wanted to let you know that if you're feeling that choke in your throat or that contraction in your heart or breathlessness, or maybe your thoughts are very random and kind of all over the place, if you're feeling disembodied, I just encourage you to take some extra time today, move a little more slowly, and just nourish yourself. All right. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you to our guest from this week. It is always such a pleasure to go deeply with another human being for an hour and have that recorded to share with the rest of the world. I think it's one of my favorite things that I've ever done. And there are other ways that the Optimal Stay would like to share with you. One of those opportunities is to meet with me over at the University of Minnesota Bakken Center. We have therapeutic yoga classes multiple times of the year, and they're always in a four-week series, like 4 weeks for low back and hips, 4 weeks for upper back and neck, 4 weeks for insomnia and anxiety. So we'll put these links into the show notes. And if you'd like to join us online through the University of Minnesota Bakken Center, we'd love to have class with you on a regular basis. A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.